Radio Prague News.
The Supreme Audit Office has criticized the Education Ministry over its subsidies program. The police president has slammed the suggestion that the Stork's Nest investigation was politically motivated. And debris removal is set to begin at the site of a destroyed church. Less than half of almost 14 billion crowns allotted between the years 2011 to 2016 for the renovation and modernization of the country's public university were used up. This according to a report by the Supreme Audit Office. In its audit, the Bureau reported that the Education Ministry, which oversaw the program, did not have a proper overview over whether the funds which were spent improved infrastructure had helped. The ministry said it did not agree with the findings and said it was conducting its own assessment of the subsidies program. The head of Prague Police, Miloš Trajanek, has come out strongly against the claim that the investigation into the Stork's Nest affair was politically ordered. On the police website, he also strongly denied that the police request for ANO leader Andrej Babiš and deputy leader Jaroslav Faltinek to be stripped of parliamentary immunity was timed to influence the election this autumn. The head of the Prague Police said that members of the regional police who he represented were apolitical and were following the law. The police are investigating subsidy fraud in the case of the Stork's Nest, a recreation and hotel facility linked to the company Agrofert, as well in the past to members of Mr. Babiš's family. A work crew will begin removing debris from the site of a 16th century historic church in Třinec Gutě destroyed by fire. The town of Třinec has provided space for the remains to be stored. The news was confirmed by Antonín Závada, who is overseeing the removal and replacement project. Construction of a new church at the site is expected to begin next autumn, and it should be completed by the spring of 2019 at the cost of around 20 million crowns. The National Centre for Combating Organised Crime investigated 361 cases since it began operation last August. The head of the unit, Michal Mazánek, confirmed for the Czech news agency. In 105 of those cases, criminal charges were filed. The head of the office rated its functioning positively and denied criticism in an annual report by state prosecutor alleging imbalances or instability in the centralized organization. The founding of the National Center for Organized Crime led to a government crisis last year between the ruling Social Democrats and ANO. The latter strongly opposed the founding of the new bureau to streamline and replace two earlier investigative units. World War II veteran and war hero Brigadier General Jaroslav Klemeš is to be buried with military honors at Strašnice Crematorium in Prague this Monday. Mr. Klemeš was the last surviving paratrooper to parachute into Nazi-occupied territory. That was the Protectorate of Bohemia and Moravia, died on August the 7th at the age of 95. Mr. Klemeš was persecuted by the communist regime after 1948 and was only fully rehabilitated in 1990. Last year, he received the country's highest honor, the Order of the White Lion. Finally, a quick look at the weather. Tuesday is expected to be cloudy with sunny periods. Daytime temperatures should reach highs of around 28 degrees Celsius. I'm Jan Wellinger. You'll find more news at radio.cz.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Ruth Franková. Coming up in today's program, the Czech president takes a stand on Andrej Babiš. A remembrance ceremony is held in Prague, marking the 72nd anniversary of the return of Czechoslovak RAF pilots. We have a roundup of the latest Czech sports news. And later on in the program, Jan Antonín Baťa headed the famous Baťa shoe company before fleeing Czechoslovakia in 1939 and settling in Brazil. His granddaughter shares fascinating stories about the magnate's life. All that coming up, so please stay with us. News: the police are seeking to lift the parliamentary immunity of ANO leader Andrej Babiš to investigate the so-called Stork's Nest affair, exploded last week just over 2 months before parliamentary elections. Polls have consistently suggested Babiš will win those elections, but any suggestion that the investigation will stand in the way of Babiš becoming prime minister have been dismissed by none other than the president himself. Chris Johnston has more.
Many questions were raised last week following the surprise announcement that police were seeking to lift the immunity of ANO leader Andrei Babiš and the second-place party leader Jaroslav Faltinek over accusations that European funds were fraudulently used for the Stork's Nest development, a hotel and recreation centre linked to Babiš's massive agro-fert company. While the parliamentary committee dealing with such matters is likely to meet at the end of this week, the lower house will not be able to deal with the police request until the start of September, when the election campaign is expected to start in earnest. Will ANO leader Babiš take a back seat in the election campaign as a result of the police move? Will he stand down as party leader temporarily? And would he be eligible to become prime minister if he stayed the campaign course and emerged as election winner? The response to the last question was answered over the weekend by President Zeman's spokesman, Jiří Ovčáček. He made clear in comments to the news server Aktuálny.cz that a possible police investigation overshadowing the ANO leader would not stand in the way of the head of state tasking Babiš with forming a government and becoming prime minister, even if he has been charged with fraud. To put it bluntly, Ovčáček spelled out that October's election winner will be invited to become prime minister. He added that he expected the president to be subject to a post-election campaign for Babiš to be excluded from being prime minister because of the charges that might be hanging over him. If the head of state's comments appear to be run-of-the-mill, President Zeman's previous words and actions cast a somewhat different light on them. 4 years ago, in June 2013, President Zeman took a very different standpoint when police were at the centre of the scandal that erupted around the then Civic Democrat leader and Prime Minister, Petr Nečas. Nečas stood down as party leader and Prime Minister over the scandal over alleged abuse of power, which directly affected him and other party members. In the political chaos that followed, President Zeman brushed off the offer of replacement Civic Democrat leader Miroslava Nemtsova to form a government, although she maintained she could muster enough support for a parliamentary majority. Zeman argued then that some of the new ministers could end up in custody. Instead, Zeman appointed a caretaker government to run the country until early elections in October. The president's latest magnanimous standpoint is one view. Whether other party leaders will share the same view if the ANO leader needs to seek support outside his party following an election win is another matter.
Chris Johnston with that report. A remembrance ceremony is being held in Prague on Monday early evening, marking the 72nd anniversary of the return of Czechoslovak aviators who served with Britain's RAF during the Second World War. Among those in attendance is said to be one of the last surviving Czech RAF men, Brigadier General Emil Boček. Ian Willoughby has the details.
Zakroužili Spitfire stěhacích perutí nad hlavním městem a zakrátko již přistáli.
This Czechoslovak radio report from the 13th of August 1945 records the jubilant atmosphere in Prague as the country's heroic aviators returned home following wartime service with Britain's Royal Air Force.
Byla to nádherná přivítání, nekonečná obětí.
It was a glorious welcome, says the reporter. The embraces went on forever. The airmen were back among their own. Among those enjoying the festivities at Prague's Ruzyně Airport on that day was Karel Bajant, an aircraft mechanic. The returned aviators included good friends he hadn't seen in years.
There were 54 planes. They flew across Prague, turned around and came back via Prague Castle and landed at Ruzyně. Then we all rushed forward so we could be there to welcome them. We were glad that it was all over and they had returned in good health, albeit late.
Around 2,500 men had signed up to the RAF's Czechoslovak squadrons from 1940 on, with more than 500 of them meeting their deaths. General Emil Boček flew with the 310 squadron and is today, at 94 years of age, one of the few surviving Czech RAF veterans, a participant in over two dozen operations over Germany, France, the Netherlands, Belgium and Denmark. He made international news last year for flying in a Spitfire after a gap of 7 decades. General Boček was on one of those planes returning from the UK in August 1945, and he explains why the journey home took longer than planned.
On
August the 7th, we set off in 54 planes for Czechoslovakia. After 2 hours and 25 minutes, we landed in Germany to refuel before flying home. But then it started to rain and became foggy, and we ended up spending a whole week there. On August 13th, we set off again, but we couldn't fly directly to Prague because that would have meant flying through the Russian zone, and the Russians didn't give us permission. So we flew to the east and went via Pilsen to Prague, to Ruzyně.
A few days later, on August 21st, 1945, the airmen were given an enormous homecoming on Prague's Old Town Square. But the jubilation wasn't to last long for the returning heroes. Following the communist takeover of 1948, many were imprisoned and suffered other forms of persecution. It wasn't until after the return of democracy at the very end of the 1980s that they began to receive the respect they deserved.
Ian Willoughby with that report. And Ian stays in the studio with a summary of the latest Czech sports news.
We begin today with athletics, and the Czech Republic had a successful World Championships in London, bringing home one gold, one silver and one bronze medal. The fact that all three came in the javelin confirmed the country's long-term status as a major power in the discipline. Following Barbara Špotáková's gold in the women's event, Jakub Vadlík and Petr Fridrich finished second and third respectively in the men's javelin on Saturday. Both are trained by Jan Železný, the all-time great who still holds the men's javelin world record. Vadlík's best throw was just 16 centimetres short of that of German gold medalist Johannes Vetter, leaving the Czech somewhat rueful.
My feelings are a little mixed. I'm terribly happy to have won the medal and to have been placed so highly. On the other hand, it's a tiny difference. It's nothing. But basically, that's the way it is. And I think this is also motivation for the future for me.
Like Vadlík, third-placed Petr Fridrich set a new personal best in London. But unlike the silver medalist, the 29-year-old was not much fancied ahead of the World Championships. Fridrich had this to say to Czech radio.
I was very lucky because the favourite Tomáš Hrela was short of the medals positioned by only 6 centimetres with his final throw. I was expecting that he would get there, so I wasn't too excited. Also, I have to say, I didn't have one perfect throw. My three throws were similar.
Football now, and despite major investments in the summer and the return of Tomáš Rosický, Sparta Prague have had a stuttering start to the season. Knocked out in the qualifiers of the Europa League, the country's richest club have seen two of their Czech league games to date end all square. Indeed, in their latest outing, Sparta could only manage a 1-1 draw away at Slovan Liberec, regardless of the fact that the latter had two players sent off before the hour mark. The Prague side's goal scorer, Martin Friedek, said he was perplexed by the result.
We held onto the ball, but we couldn't get going. I don't know how it's possible. We didn't create any clear chances. There are no apologies for a game like that. We're all disappointed, and we will remain disappointed because we should have won here.
And elsewhere, league leaders Viktoria Plzeň made it 9 points out of 9 with a 1-0 home victory over Olomouc. Slavia Prague, who were 2 points behind in second, overcame Jihlava 2-0 in the capital. And that's all the sports news for today.
Just a reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Dolores Bata Arambasic is the granddaughter of Jan Antonín Baťa, one of the most prominent members of a great family of Czech industrialists. During her visit to Prague from her native Brazil, she spoke to my colleague Ian Willoughby.
The Baťa family, who built a shoemaking empire in Zlín, Moravia, were perhaps the most important industrialists in interwar Czechoslovakia. One of the best-known members of the family was Jan Antonín Batia, who headed the firm after the death of Batia founder Tomáš Batia, his half-brother. After fleeing the Nazis in 1939, the tycoon eventually settled in Brazil, where he established four new cities. His granddaughter, Dolores Bata Arambašić, was born in one of those cities, Batatuba. Today, in her late 60s, she's a frequent visitor to the Czech Republic. And when we spoke in Prague, I asked her what were her strongest recollections of Jan Antonín Batia.
I have many memories of him. He was very tall and he was strong. He had beautiful blue eyes. He was a kind of a personality, you know, that you would, when he came somewhere, so it was like a personality that was coming, you know. I never saw my grandfather arrogant. He never was arrogant. He was smiling, you know. He was very, very kind and gentle. And another side, he was a businessman with very strong will. He was always very interested to teach us things. To me, for instance, teach me poetry, you know, how to make a poem.
Did you speak Czech together?
Yes, always. I used to live in one of the cities that he built, that is called Batatuba, and he built a little factory there that had 1,200 workers. At home, we speak just Czech, and in my home, Czech and Serbian, because my father was Serbian, and of course Portuguese, but Portuguese I spoke more when I was in the school.
What kind of things did your grandfather tell you about Czechoslovakia and his life here?
Czechoslovakia was a very, in our mind, in our feeling, it was a very healthy and nice place to work. He would always say that it was his people and that he did everything what he could for his people. They were in the first place. One very, very important thing that he did was to simply be silent on some questions because he was afraid that the Germans will kill his people in Zlin. But everything he did, when you read his books, so you have the idea of what he thought about his country, that were competent people, a small country, but with a very, very, very rich history and very competent people.
You mentioned the Germans. Is it the case that he helped to fund the resistance against the Nazis and also helped to fund the Benish government in exile?
Yes, yes, yes. We have lots of documents that prove this. He had the factories here in Czech Republic, but also in England, in France, in Switzerland. So he ordered them to separate a certain amount of money to send to London for the Czech resistance. And he also financed 800 cells of resistance in Slovakia against the Nazis. And just one of the examples is the amount of 6 million crowns that he paid to make this work. And also when the Czech pilots were in England, so he bought 3 Spitfires with the Czech lion, you know, to give pride to the pilots that they are flying Czech planes and they served in the Royal Air Force.
I was reading also that in 1947, which is before the communist takeover, he was sentenced in absentia for, and I quote, the planned forced transfer of Czechs to Patagonia. That's such a bizarre sounding thing. What does that even mean?
Let me just explain to you. This was a mix-up that the communists did on purpose. He was a businessman, and he was taught to build things for people. Uncle Thomas, old Uncle Thomas, you know, the history and all that. So in those days, after the war, there were many, many, many people around the world without houses, without land, without, you know, the refugees, those refugees. And he was a man that would make always, he would work in some plan, you know, to solve some situation. And in those days, Patagonia was a place that nobody was there. So it was a possibility if somebody would like to go. So, okay, you know, but it was just an idea. There was not a plan. And the communists took this, they twisted it to say so many stupidities about him. That was an awful lie. But he was sentenced not because of this. They sued him for 65 crimes. And he was found innocent of all of them. But he was sentenced, you won't believe it. We opened the file in 207. He was sentenced because he did not support the Czech resistance overseas.
So a total lie.
Total lie. First, because there is no law, never was a law in Czechoslovakia that would order somebody to do this, you know. And then he was sentenced. There was a Brazilian consul. His name was Décio Coimbra from Itamaraty in Brazil, who was on these audiences and all that. And he wrote about. It's a fantastic document. And there is a testimony from one man, Slovak, who said about these 6 million crowns, you know. But what was the purpose? The purpose was that the Bata companies here, they were nationalized in 45, okay. But under the law, the government had to pay the indemnization, you see, and they did not. So the only way not to pay this indemnization was to confiscate his properties. And this was all about this trial in 47.
Your grandfather built four cities in Brazil. You lived in one of them as a girl. How was it growing up in a city built by your own grandfather?
You know, it is very interesting because what we feel was that we were part of something that was good for people. Of course, I was a child. I left Batatuba when I was 16, to go to São Paulo to study. And after that, my grandfather died. And it was a very pleasant place to live, you know, peaceful and normal place, just.
The Batias are famously known, of course, as shoe magnates. But was your grandfather involved in the footwear business in Brazil or other businesses?
No, he was involved first on the footwear. Batatuba had this factory, as I told you, and they had 80, almost 90 stores. So they were making shoes. When he came to Brazil, he was invited by the Brazilian president, Getúlio Vargas. Getúlio told him, he said, listen, Bata, come to Brazil and let's make shoes. And it started like this. The business was very, very good. It was tough because of the blacklist and this lawsuit in Czech Republic, so in Czechoslovakia. So he had to make money. And he had 300,000 hectares that had a project, but this project could not be executed because of all these problems. So in this land, in this places, he built the other three cities.
I was reading that in 1957 he was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yes.
What for?
Because of this project of colonization that came many, many people from outside, refugees and all that. He sent affidavits to Europe, inviting people, for instance, for Batatuba. They would have place to live, they would have a job. The first group that came, there were 4,000 people that came from Czechoslovakia, that came from Hungary, from Belgium, France and Holland. And these people had a place to stay. And then some of them that wanted, so they were sent to these places, this colonization stuff, you know, this project of colonization.
I believe you come here quite often to the Czech Republic. How do you feel when you're here? And where do you feel most at home in the Czech Republic?
First of all, in Czech Republic, I feel home. But when I go to Zlin, something happens, you know, because I feel that I know everybody, that are my people, that are my friends. I feel that I came back home, you know, and it's very interesting because I'm Brazilian. I was not born here.
Dolores Bata Arambasic was Ian Willoughby's guest in that edition of One on One, which was first broadcast in February 2017. If you have any comments about today's program, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franjková. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.